Neil Armstrong.
I think he's an original. He's an original who's fueled by a variety of existing sources, from television, from pop culture, from movies, but he funnels it into a unique mixture that no one else quite has.
It ain't hard to tell.
Oz is the kicker that's going.
And of course, NAS are the letters that's going.
It ain't hard to tell.
I leave a froze like heroin in your nose. Nas, I rock well. It ain't hard to tell.
It's like the apple situation. Half man, half amazing. Cause in my physical, I can't express through song. Delete stress like Motrin, then extend strong. I drink my wet with Medusa, give a shotgun to hell. From the split that I lived in hell. It ain't hard to tell.
November 10th, 2015. This is episode 154 of the Thank You, Rob podcast. I'm your host, Rob Small.
Yay!
Normally, Johnny Question Mark is here co-hosting, but he... What happened? Yeah, he's questionable.
He's living his name right now.
Yes, he is. Where is he? I don't know. So, Amber Ace Cleveland, you're here.
I'm here.
In your entirety.
Well... Mostly.
Well, thanks for sitting in on this. And we're here, of course, with DJ Neil Armstrong.
Yay!
What's going on?
Yeah, this is awesome, man. This is cool to have you here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for Dinner and a Mixtape.
Yes.
And correlation with...
For the Love Mixtape. It's a lot of mixtape.
I'm going to turn you up just a little bit.
Okay,
just a little
you.
Bit. Just don't get crazy.
Hot mic.
Don't get crazy. Well, before we get into this here, I want to remind the listeners to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. That's a great way to support the podcast. And leave a review, you know? Yeah. Amber Ace Cleveland left a review once, and it's awesome. She name drops herself in the review.
I really do.
But your name dropped a lot on the show anyway, so.
Yeah.
So this is cool. So that's a great way to support the show, and we really appreciate that. Neil Armstrong, you're here, and you've got Poe.
I got my dog.
Greatest DJ name.
It is.
I've heard in a long time. When it came across my email, I was like, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I've heard my favorite ones are there was a kid back in the day called Blackie Chan. I thought that was hilarious.
Blackie Chan, nice.
There was another dude named Rumpel Foreskin, which I thought was
oh,
hilarious.
No.
Yeah, those will always be my favorite.
You know,
just cause
it
was hilarious.
Do you know Mook's Twitter name, which I think should be your DJ name? Refugenius.
Refugenius, nice.
I think that would be a great DJ name.
Another great DJ name is DJ Dick Doorknocker.
You've told me about this DJ.
Yeah. He's not a real DJ, it's just a name, but it's awesome. So I know we're running on limited time here, and I do appreciate you taking the time to do this,
absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
Let's bring it back. Let's start from the beginning.
All the way
All right.
back.
New York.
Back in time.
Born and raised.
Yeah.
Where about?
Queens, New York.
Queens.
But, like, I was one of the kids who kind of left my neighborhood early. I went to high school in the Bronx.
Okay.
I went to college in Manhattan. I used to go to church in Staten Island, so.
You were all over the place.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I used to travel a lot. Like, when I was in college, a lot of my friends went to, like, school upstate New York, and I guess my parents kind of put the travel bug in me when I was really young. So, you know, I'm from New York, but I'm, you know, I have a lot
not
of
not afraid to travel.
Yeah.
A lot of people
Clearly.
Are a lot of people are afraid to leave New York, you know? Like is there anything better outside of New York?
Yeah.
Yes. And there is.
Yeah.
And there
I
is.
Absolutely.
York, I
the answer is
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It depends.
Depends on what you're looking for.
Yes, and being from New York though, there is absolute arrogance, you know, there, of course. But every real New Yorker I know is also a real sweetheart.
Yeah.
It's usually the rude New Yorkers are never from New York. They're from somewhere else.
I 100% agree with that statement.
That moved in.
Do you say they're from Jersey?
No, they're from Kansas. They're not from New York.
I totally agree with this because when I lived out there, I came back home, I brought my mother out there, and she was like, everyone here is so nice. I'm like, yes, people here are nice.
Yes.
Actually, I've heard that. I've heard
the real New Yorkers are nice, especially if you look lost or, you know, except in extreme cases where some dude is, like, super busy and he's like, I got to run.
Yeah.
But, you know, that some people might find that being rude, but it's more like, you know, I got to manage my time. I'm out. So.
Hashtag New York nice.
Yeah.
Minnesota nice is a thing. I'm sure have you heard that before, Minnesota nice?
I'm not sure, man.
It's a thing. It's a thing out here.
The only thing I know about Minnesota is Kevin Garnett and the Timberwolves.
Prince?
I've been here, of course.
Yeah,
Prince, of course. Yeah. Lake Minnetonka.
Yep. Is this your first time here?
No, I'm pretty sure I performed here with Jay.
Okay.
But I could be wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. I might have been in Indianapolis. I can't remember. Okay. I don't know. You know,
let's just say you were in Mindianapolis. people refer to it as that, Mindianapolis.
Sure, why not?
So your parents, are your parents still around in New York, or where are they
my
at
my mother lives in New York. My father lives in Arizona. They came from the Philippines, like, back in the 60s, early 70s. Okay. And I believe I'm the first generation, right, that was born here. So I'm American. You know, my parents used me to kind of learn English, you know, so I never learned my parents' native language.
Sure.
But, you know, I've been back to the Philippines. I've been really fortunate. My job as a DJ has brought me literally around the world. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good gig.
Oh, right yeah.
And when you
I'm
don't
not
have to,
complaining.
When it's not on your dollar.
I am not complaining.
So what were your earliest memories of hip-hop in New York?
Oh, that's easy. So
the birthplace.
Let's see. My earliest memories, of course, were like the break-in, like the early break-in days. Mm-hmm. So like it must have been 83 or something. The song on the radio that I guess is kind of forgotten now, but every radio station was playing Jam on It.
Jam on It.
Yeah, by Nucleus.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if you listen to that, some people might be like, that's not really hip-hop, but it absolutely was, you know, rapping and blah, blah, blah. And mm-hmm. I used to sing that song so much, my uncles used to make fun of me because I was always rapping that. Of course, Run DMC, and my sister got a cassette tape of one of their, maybe it was Rock Box, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. So that was a weird time, though, because it, you know, hip-hop had, that was really in its super gestation period.
Oh, yeah.
And it had just crossed over, and, you know, there was no, it was a different animal back then. Mm-hmm. Like, the people who listened to it, the people who created it, were really part of that culture.
Right.
Right? So I can imagine, like, you know, tonight's live mixtape event, like, imagine that didn't exist, and all these guys, you guys were all part of it and doing it, and then all of a sudden, someone in New York heard it, you know, because it was on the radio. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, I guess, what was happening. You know, there was these little concentrated pockets in Harlem and a lot of the black and urban neighborhoods, the Hollis, Queens, and it was there, and then all of a sudden, the radio allowed, you know, someone like me who lived in a totally different area to hear it for the first time, and I think, you know, that was a my first experience with hip-hop, but me actually becoming part of the culture, I'd say, happened when my pastor's son, I was a real good kid, so I used to be part of a church youth group and everything, and my
what
pastor,
happened?
I think I'm still pretty, like, you know, I have my Boy Scout tendencies, people would say I don't really drink, I'm not... You know, I don't really do drugs. Like,
he takes care of a dog.
Yeah, that's it. That's my high right there.
Yeah, there you go.
So, whatchamacallit, my pastor's son gave me a copy of N.W.A. Straight Outta Compton.
Oh. Yeah.
And
that's awesome. First of all, the pastor's son owned that.
And a copy of Eric B. and Rakim. I guess Follow the Leader.
Okay.
Is that the name of the album? I can't remember. The one with
Paid in Full?
It wasn't Paid in Full. No. It was the other one. The one they're like sitting on the car in the back.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, right? Okay. Yeah. I think that's right.
Right? Follow the Leader.
Follow the Leader. Sounds right.
So those were my first. That was actually my introduction into listening to the music in a more adult fashion, I guess. I was a teenager, and that was my introduction. And then very quickly, oddly enough, a lot of my hip-hop came from me being at church. I haven't really thought about this, but the church I went to was in Jamaica. So, you know, the Tribe Called Quest always, reps Jamaica. Always mention Jamaica. My church was in Jamaica, Queens, across the street from a school called Hillcrest High School, and another school was down the block called Jamaica High School. And it's a little more north than where a lot of those cats were from, like St. Albans and Laurelton and all those areas that are a little more south. And I was my church was basically in a black neighborhood, but I guess it was at this weird crux where, like, my church, there was white folk, there was a Pakistani family, there was us. Like, mm-hmm. it was not a church that was racially, you know, uniform.
Right.
There was just a bunch of different people. And
well, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then we used to have these conferences that just chucked everybody on Long Island together in one place. So that means the kid, like the black kids, were hanging out, like the white kids from the middle of like Lake Ronkonkoma. We got lakes out there too. And they're just interacting. And I would be on the bus taking these, you know, bus trips with like the other churches in the area. And De La Soul's first album had just came out, and the whole bus was singing it, like,
nice.
Together.
Yeah.
That, it was like that,
yeah.
you know, and that was probably my earliest foray into like, wow, I really like this music.
Yeah.
You know, De La was kind of like a, you know, I don't know what people think about them now, but at the time, you know, they were doing the, it was like a hippie, you know, a lot of, like, love and blah, blah, blah,
oh, yeah.
all that. So, you know, I really liked that kind of message, and then that was also the year that Slick Rick's, you know, Slick Rick's album first came out and Public Enemy's album came out. Mm-hmm. So I was getting bombarded with, like, you know, the
classic
Slick.
After classic yeah. right there, yeah. yeah.
But, like, you know, Public Enemy was militant.
Right, right.
De La Soul was, you know,
kind
a little
the hippie
more.
Side, yeah. yeah.
And Slick Rick was that, you know, swag.
Yep, yep.
And that was it. You know, it hooked me, mm-hmm. it sucked me in. Next thing you know, I was like, you know, I was the dude who was recording Stretch Armstrong and Bobbito tapes at the middle of the night, and I'd bring them to school the next yeah. day. I had forced my friends to come with me early to, like, the hip-hop shows, and I'd be the idiot that got in early because I was scared I wasn't going to get in, and I'd stand in the front row from the first act all the way until the end, and all my boys would be in the back like, oh, I can't take this. No, we've been yeah. been standing for like 6 hours now.
Right, right.
I used to be that idiot too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you're
I still would be. You know, I'm just
pretty sure Rob was that idiot.
I was that idiot. Absolutely.
You're in safe company,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. yeah.
So that was it, and it came to a point where I just wanted to be part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
I got. I don't know if it was just, you know, destiny. I just met certain people. Like, I ended up meeting Q-Bert and those guys at the New Music Seminar in New York back in 1994. And then, you know, again, there was no Twitter. There's no me telling
no
people,
social media.
Yeah. So certain people in New York heard that, oh, Neil hung out with Q-Bert, so he must really be a good DJ.
Yeah.
And when the X-Men were doing a showcase at Fat Beats back in the day,
mm-hmm.
I walked in there. I was like, hey, you know, at the time I was kind of doing journalistic stuff, and because there wasn't any at the time,
mm-hmm.
and not on the internet anyway. And I was like, hey, I interviewed Q-Bert. Can I interview you guys? And the X-Men, instead of just letting me hang out with them, they took me under their wing.
Nice.
And, you know, that's it.
And that's
like,
where it started.
Yeah, that was the very beginning start, and it was.
Now, but before yeah. that, did you have turntables, or were you DJing yet?
I started messing around, like, in 90, I'd say 95, but my gestation period was extremely short. It was like, I bought turntables, and next thing you know, I'm Neil Armstrong of the Fifth Platoon. And back then, it, you know, that was, that held a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was one of the kids who hung out with the X-Men, who knew Q-Bert. And literally, if you talk to me in January, I was just Thomas Neil Rodriguez. And then 6 months later, I was this other character.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's cool. Right sure. place at the right time, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and then, well, another part of the story is that I I'm pretty lucky. I'm not acting like it right now, but I am actually highly educated. I have a degree in chemical engineering from a school called Cooper Union, and they had sent me to Hong Kong to study. And that one thing kind of changed the whole direction of my life.
Mm-hmm.
When I was out there, that was when Q-Bert and Shortcut were developing the Vestex mixer. And I had already met Q-Bert and Shortcut you know, the summer before.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took a plane from Hong Kong to Taiwan, hung out with them. And that was also part of the story, that how I became Neil Armstrong. You know, I had just started DJing, and I was in Q-Bert's hotel room, and he's like, yo, come cut with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, like, what's that? It's the equivalent of someone who just started rhyming going to KRS-One's house and being like, all right, let's spit.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? And again, I had at that point only been DJing for 3 months, maybe, yeah, tops.
Wow.
I didn't even have techniques at that time. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's not true. I actually brought my Technique 1200s to Hong Kong with me. I brought one in a carry-on bag because, you know, the rules were entirely different back then.
And yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty crazy. I lugged like 60 pounds of weight, extra weight, just because I was like, look, I'm going to lose my mind if I'm out there for that long,
right,
without turntables and I need to practice.
Yeah.
I ended up meeting the DMC Hong Kong champions of the last like 5 years at the time out there, and that's kind of how everything came together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a pretty crazy story if I actually think about it.
Yeah. Again, right place at the right time.
We're totally going to have to re-listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Don't jump in like you know where we're at here.
I don't.
No, I know. Again, I know we're kind of pressed on time, so I'm going to skip ahead here. So you had the connection with Q-Bert and the X-Men at that point.
Yeah.
Where did the connection with Jay-Z come? How did you meet up with
him?
How did
in that between happen? The whole turntablist thing, so I don't know how much... Turntablism was definitely big at one point everywhere. I mean... There's a record that Atmosphere did, and he just shouted out DJ's names. I don't know how he knew who we were, but he shouted out the Fit Platoon and my name and every member in my crew.
Nice.
And I have two copies somewhere just beat to hell. But in between that time, unfortunately, kind of turntablism just died. It's not what it is. Definitely today, I'd say around 2005 was maybe the last really good year in almost across the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are sparks of greatness still, but you know the Renaissance period was that time between I'd say 97 to 2005 was like this really crazy period where everybody was getting so good and so many new styles were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was around that time that, I don't know, I started making these mixtapes. And DJs who were like me, like turntables DJs, often, they would just go scratch heavy and trick heavy. You know, their style of DJing is something that you want to watch. Like it's made for people to stop what they're doing and see what they're doing. They're,
right.
You know, the DJ is supposed to be the star. And it ended up being kind of at odds with, like, the party rock DJ.
Mm-hmm.
The party rock DJ may not have the skill sets, but they can move a crowd. And it was also at that point that, like, you know, music started to change. I think the interest in the skill sets kind of changed universally from rapping, from, you know, lyrics. Lyrics started getting dumbed down,
mm-hmm,
et cetera, et cetera. And now we have... what we have today with,
yeah,
whatever, you know, future and whatever's going on.
Yeah.
And turntablism also kind of suffered that little switch, and I ended up making mixtapes. So my mixtapes actually took a lot of my turntablist background, but I made it palpable to a normal audience.
Mm.
So the scratching was done, tastefully. It wasn't overpowering. And,
right,
you know, the tricks that were done, you know, the heads who knew what I was doing were like, oh, wow, he's drumming the beat out and blah blah blah, but the other people would just hear, oh, this is cool, you know, I can nod my head to this.
Mm-hmm.
From that, from what I could tell, that was what got me to Jay. In New York, I ended up gaining a lot of fans of my mixtapes, especially the people who ended up having high level jobs at like MTV, at Vibe magazine, at whatever. Like, they were all friends of mine, mm-hmm, who happened to be hip-hop heads, that, you know, and so they would hear myself and be like, yo, this is, I can hear how much work went into this. So there's this interesting picture that must have been taken in 2005, maybe 2006, and it was a mixtape issue. So there was a group of DJs like DJ Doo-Wop and Brucey B and all these old school cats that were in one picture.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was another picture with the current guy, so DJ Drama, I'm sorry, not DJ Drama, DJ like K Slay at the time and SNS and blah, blah, blah. And so that was their clique. And I was actually in a picture. It was me, DJ Vlad, DJ Drama, this kid named DJ L, DJ Warrior. And like all those guys, they make mixtapes, but they make like the artist mixtapes and the, you know, the it's not skill based. They're almost like albums, like 50 right. Cent's first album was really a mixtape, yep, blah, blah, yep. blah. So they were those guys. But the Vibe, the guys at Vibe who knew me were like, you know, we know you're not doing this. And for this reason, you're going to be in this picture as well, because mm-hmm. you're doing something entirely different, but artistic and blah, blah, blah. So I'm in this picture with all these guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people, like I remember Sycamore's in it. I think he's not really DJing anymore. Vlad now does Vlad TV. Mm-hmm. Drama's, you know, he's been elevated to what he did. And in between that point, I became Jay-Z's DJ. Mm-hmm. If you trace how that happened, the story that I know is that there's a girl named Vashti Cola, who in New York is like a downtown it girl is what they would say. Mm-hmm. She's been a downtown it girl for like 7 years now, maybe even more. Basically, like she's the type of girl like who she could promote a party in the night. She don't have to. Like if she says I'm gonna do a party tonight. Mm-hmm. The whole room will be packed.
Right.
You know, she said, you know, all the girls want to be her, all the guys want to date her, that mm-hmm. type of girl. And she used to work for Jay at Def Jam. And at the time, Jay had kind of changed the format of his live show. So at the time, he was forever DJing with Green Lantern. So if you actually really wanted to know who Jay's real DJ is, it's Green Lantern, hands down. He was with him for a long time. Mm-hmm. And Lantern's thing is not the turntable stuff. It's not like that. Kanye was working with A-Track at the time, and I guess Jay kind of wanted to do a show that like what Kanye was doing in integrating a band, integrating a DJ. Mm-hmm. And I was known in the social circle, you know, of New York. Like, you know, I used to have a blog on Hypebeast and this, that, and the other. And, you know, I'm with Adidas. You know, I have those connections being in New York and my manager.
So you had all those connections before the Jay-Z thing even?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
For sure. And then...
Which I'd love to hear more about the Adidas thing, because I'm a huge fan of Adidas.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyways, I'm sorry.
And then I also had the chops... Not quite as good as A-Track, obviously, but I come from the same cloth. I'm cut from the same cloth as him.
Sure.
So I can do turntable stuff. But the other DJs that, I don't know, tried to do it, they just didn't have it. I don't mm-hmm. know. So it came to a point, as far as I know, where Jay was like, ask Vashti Cola. Again, Jay was working at Def Jam. He was the president of Def Jam at the time. Mm-hmm. Vashti was working for him there. And Jay was like, you know, I need a DJ for this next tour. Who could do it? And she was like, oh, that's easy, Neil. And it was literally like on a Wednesday, I got an email. By that Friday, I was in a space much like this. Mm-hmm. They set turntables up. I don't remember the first song we did, but they're like, all right, it's time, let's go. And then a week later, I was in front of 10,000 people.
Damn. So, had you ever performed as a DJ to that many people before?
Maybe the closest thing would have been like Rocksteady, but not like that. Okay. Not 10,000. I don't know. Maybe 1,000.
I couldn't even imagine.
Maybe. Yeah, it was different. But of course, like, you know, the role when I'm doing that is entirely, no one's there to see me. Like, I have no ego about that.
Sure.
They're there to see Jay.
Right,
I'm just
right.
backing him up.
Yeah.
And the A-Track actually used to do, I think he used to have pieces in the show where he used to do his thing. Mm-hmm. And I think I had the opportunity to do that with Jay maybe early on, but I was like, nah, that's okay. By that time, it had been like at least, oh my God, 5 years, 7 years since I had really done turntable stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was like, look, I'm cool with helping you build your show and giving you ideas with stuff, doing stuff like that mm-hmm. and, you know, rocking like that. You know, I'd rather do that. So, yeah. It was
cool,
man.
Yeah,
for sure.
And that you were with him for a few years.
For 2 years.
Yeah. Okay.
For 2008, 2009, and the beginning of There was one last tour in 2010 I was supposed to go on, but then Young Guru took over at that point.
Wow. Yeah. And then you guys went all over the world.
Yeah. I mean, even without him, I went kind of... I've DJed on every continent with the exception of Antarctica at this point.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, you got to bring the party to Antarctica here. That's what it sounds like.
I wish.
and you did the 9/11 tribute, too, at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah,
too.
That was one of the... That was the last tour I did with Jay. And those were definitely interesting times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. Any crazy stories that you can share or
I mean, like,
nothing
that will
put you in jail or anything? I don't know, anything. Juicy. I need a juicy story.
I mean, on the hip-hop tip, like, man, I just got to do a lot of, like, dream-worthy stuff. But yeah, I performed at Madison Square Garden. You know, being from New York, I think that was actually one of the things I would... When I would pass by Madison Square, I'd always be like, man, wouldn't that be great to say I performed there?
Yeah.
And I performed there in front of, like, the world because it was, like, you know, a world...
It was televised.
Yeah, world televised event. Yeah. And I've performed there, like, 6 times. So, you know, I'm cool if I never do it again.
Yeah. That's an amazing thing to cross off the bucket list right
there.
Yeah, you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
I did... Like when we were on tour, I guess when Michael Jackson passed away, so I got to, you know, throw his voice during the shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to scratch Obama's voice when we performed for him at the inauguration.
Oh, right, right. Did you get to meet him too?
No, at the time we didn't. They ended up meeting him later, like the rest of the Rock Boys, because like clearance is crazy. You have to get like, you know, it's not something you do overnight.
Right.
Like you have to have clearance way in advance. And then let me think. It's like, you know, geek out stuff for me. Like I got to rap Big Pimpin' with Jay. Like me and Jay, like, you know, like how you would do that on with someone on the stoop.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, come on, man.
That's
who
pretty
does
cool.
That?
Yeah.
Like that's I remember it like so clearly. Like it was when Bun B was performing with us. I guess we must have been in Texas. And he comes over and we just start rhyming like the whole song together. And I was in my head, I was like, man, don't fuck up the words. You're gonna look at me like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And you know, it's just like how you would do that with your homies. But I was doing this with Jay.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, my eyes are lighting up. Like, if people could see me, like, because that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, who gets to do that? I got to throw a... And as much as, you know, I am a Jay fan, of course, especially, you know, having worked with him. But I'm from Queens, so I'm a Nas fan. Like, before that, I could care less about Jay at the time. I was like, yeah, whatever, you know. And, but... You know, a cool thing I got to do was when we would perform Dead Presidents, I got to throw Nas's voice and do the chorus.
Right.
You know, like, those are still really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of weird things, I had dinner with Sarkozy's son. So Sarkozy is, I don't know if he still is, but Sarkozy is the prime minister of France, I guess.
Okay.
He was essentially like the president. So I had to... dinner with the president's son once when we were in Paris. Like, you know, that's weird. I met Rashida Wallace once at a backstage at a Coldplay show. Stuff like that. You
Coldplay, Jay-Z's favorite band or a fan of?
I guess so. Yeah. It was very odd. that night was very odd. But I met Rashida Jones... And I didn't even recognize her. Mm-hmm. I knew who she was, but I just didn't. She doesn't look like the way she does on TV.
Okay.
She's like a tiny little girl.
Yeah. Does she still look good, though?
Yeah. She's a pretty girl. But I don't know if it was just at the time she had lost mad weight. And, you know, I'll always kick myself in the neck because what could have been. Sorry, I love you. I love you, Yuko. But, but, yeah, I remember just talking to her because, you know, she was kind of like odd man out as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we were just talking.
Yeah.
And I had no idea who she was. And, I wouldn't say anything like that. But enough to the point where if I was like, hey, we should keep in touch, I could have probably at least copped an email address.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably, but.
That's more than most people can say right there.
Exactly. Yeah. And I had, like I said, maybe 2 or 3 months later, I realized who she was. You know, the TV show, I don't think Parks and Rec.
Well, she's on there, yeah.
She's on Parks and Rec.
I think she was on The Office at the time, maybe? Was it The Office?
No. She was on Park and Rec.
Right. I think before that, maybe she wasn't a part of The Office, but yeah, definitely Parks and Recreation.
I don't think Parks and Rec had started yet I was just not watching TV, so I had no idea.
But she'd been around, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I was cool. Like a...
Was this before you met your wife?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So it worked out anyway.
Right. Worked out for the better.
Yes, so tell
me about the Adidas deal.
Well...
Because you're an ambassador.
Yeah. Well, I was working with Adidas since at least 2003, I would say. And, you know, I don't know. New York is just like anywhere. I think your community of people that you know, like, you know, if I was out here, like, how do you know Ace? How do you know blah, blah, blah? Like, you just build a community of like-minded people eventually. And in New York, a lot of like-minded people end up in positions of power. So... The girl who did a lot of my covers for my CDs, her name's Hannah Kang. At the time, her boyfriend was a guy named Oliver Kahn. Oliver Kahn, man, I'm horrible. Oliver, I'm sorry, I forgot your last name. Anyway, he used to work for Adidas, and he had also heard my mixtapes. Mm-hmm. So he would get me to do events for him. So it started like that. So someone saw me there, and then... You know, someone that was putting on an event for Muhammad Ali was like, oh, we should get Neil to do it. So I ended up DJing for Muhammad Ali. I met Muhammad Ali. I was DJing, and he was pulling my pants, and I was like, so I might have kicked Muhammad Ali by mistake. So, you know, then the people who saw me at the Muhammad Ali thing were like, oh, wow, this guy did a great job. Let's get him to do this one. And then it grew from there very organically to the point where when I was with Jay, you know, this is before Adidas was getting Kanye and Pharrell. I guess I was an early representation of what those guys would end up doing for Adidas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at one point, my friends who worked at Adidas, they used to send me this picture. Like, they have their office in Portland, and there was a huge... I don't know how many stories, but so whatever. This is one story, two, maybe three story high billboard of me on the side of the Adidas office.
Why did they choose
me, I have no idea.
You got the look, man. You got the look.
I have no idea. So, yes, this picture was on the side of their building for I don't know how many months.
Yeah.
And, you know, that like it was like that. You know, I was doing ads for them. My first ad was like a Star Wars one, actually. When they were doing the Star Wars collaboration. Mm-hmm. And then
Star Wars fan over
there. I am.
Me too, absolutely. And then I did another thing when they, like, with Jeremy Scott and, you know, just like that. And then, of course, you know, now they do have Kanye. Now they do have Pharrell and Nego. And, you know, my role is different because I'm not, you know, I have, again, no ego about my role. Like, I'm not going to do what Kanye does. So,
right.
I still do quite a bit for them, but, you know, it's my role is definitely more of a, you know, I rep the clothing and I actually do some running stuff for them because I'm not in shape right now or I'm not as in good shape as I should be because I've been eating my way across the United States. But, I have run a bunch of marathons, and that's another one of my passions, running. So they're actually doing a lot with running now, and I've been able to do... Like, I did the last gig I did for them in New York. We actually ran a 5K. So I ran a 5K with them, with a bunch of influencers, quote-unquote, and then I ran straight to the DJ booth and started DJing.
Nice. Yeah. So, that's cool.
Yeah.
New York City Marathon just happened too, didn't it?
It was
Alicia Keys ran in that.
The week before the New York City Marathon, we did like a little activation for that.
Okay.
I've learned a lot about marketing and what people like. I guess we're in this situation now where, you know, just flashing a billboard or buying an ad isn't enough. People want some kind of experience to associate. So I think a lot of marketers are kind of building stuff around this idea.
Sure.
You know, even myself doing the dinner and the mixtape thing, I'm trying to make an experience for people.
Yeah. How much time? Are we okay with time?
You are right at the end here.
Right at the end? Okay. So, do we got time? He's got to explain the dinner and a mixtape
thing.
Yes. You got time for that?
Of course. I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
All right. So dinner and a mixtape. So my whole thing, this whole thing came about because I am still a DJ. I still love music, all types. But, you know, if you go to your average club in New York and almost anywhere in the world now, you know, you're going to play Fetty Wap. And yeah, you're going to play at the worst ones, Taylor Swift and Britney Spears and Justin Bieber and whatever's on the radio, basically. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, I'm not one of those purist guys who blame the kids and blame the music and blame the clubs. And, you know, that's how it is. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, what I listen to is not what my parents listen to. And even within hip-hop, like, people kind of don't realize it, but Jam On It sounds nothing like Eric B. and Rakim. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty damn sure at the time there was some, you know, dissension in the ranks. They're like, who are these new people coming up? You know?
Right, right.
And that happened with Kool Moe Dee and LL Cool J. And, you know, this is not a new thing. Like, mm-hmm, that music evolves and changes. But this latest evolution, I'm not really, I don't have as much of a connection to it anymore. I think a lot of the music that's coming out, that pop music anyway, that is more based from the electronic music side.
Sure. A lot of the pop, yeah.
Yeah. The sounds that
EDM
they're using.
Inspired stuff, yeah.
You know, and it's,
and that
it's,
could be part of just getting old, you know?
Yeah.
You know, getting older. And I know that's hard to admit myself. I'm 36, and it's like,
yeah,
I find myself more often than not being like, what is this crap?
Yeah, yeah.
These kids are listening to.
I, as a DJ, though, I am one of the DJs who's like, our job is to take care of the people, mm-hmm, you know, even if I don't agree with it. So if,
right,
God forbid, I end up at a Sweet 16 and all these kids want to hear is Justin Bieber, you're going to get Justin Bieber.
Right.
I'm not going to be like, no, you got to listen to freaking Gangstar. That's, you got
to
be some
gotta
arrogant
play to the
person.
Crowd.
Yes.
Play to the crowd.
That is our job. Mm-hmm. Our job is to make a bunch of people happy that never met each other, mm-hmm, that might have had crappy days or fighting with their wife, fighting, mm-hmm, with their girlfriends, fired from their job, and we are there to make them forget that.
Right.
They're not there to have a you know, social studies in a class.
Right.
You know, and so that's my opinion. Some people are different. So anyway, instead of complaining about how the club is, I was like, well, you know, the perfect place where I could play a Stevie Wonder and a Jackson 5 song and an older De La Soul song is dinner.
Right.
Dinner's the perfect place to do that.
Yeah.
And I also happen to love to cook. I love to eat, obviously. And thus was born Dinner and a Mixtape. So instead of dinner and a movie, that classic American date night, mm-hmm, I did dinner and a mixtape. Mm-hmm. So dinner is often provided by a great, you know, in this case is going to be
Lola Rosa's.
The music is provided by myself, and it's just this opportunity to listen to what I do in a unique setting,
mm-hmm,
you know, and incorporate that love of food. So I've been pretty lucky. This one came together like that.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it is, but I'm not going to be mad if like two people come to eat, if somehow 100 people
there's
come to eat.
There's already two people eating.
Oh, there we go. So we're good. We already reached
I'm
our
hungry.
Expectation.
The talk of food has already made me hungry.
It smells incredible, too.
Yeah, it smelled good when
I
came here.
I mean, I saw what they put together, so it's that I like to work with forward-thinking, you know, chefs,
yeah,
you know, who do interesting stuff.
Did you see my specially made cupcakes?
No,
for you?
And yeah, I need to see those. And I
made cupcakes with Neil and the dog Poe
yeah,
on the cupcakes.
Oh yeah, I've already
sweet,
the picture's already on Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram.
All right, I have to put that up.
Yeah.
So that's where this comes from. It's also an opportunity for me to do kind of a listening session for my mixtape. So, mm-hmm, the newest one I just did is called Extraordinary. But I've been doing these dinner and a mixtape events for the last I'd say a year and a half. I've been able to do one. I did one in Hong Kong, Manila, Toronto, and then basically all over the U.S. at this,
mm-hmm,
point. And now in St.
Paul,
Minnesota.
There we are.
At the Bedlam Theater.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the mixtape you have is actually...
It's a cassette USB. So my first mixtape came out on cassette. That's how long I've been making mixtapes.
Yeah.
And in between then, I don't know, I have 14 actual things that I've recorded and then a bunch of stuff I did online. So I did like a one called The DNA of the Blueprint for Jay, Marcy to Barclays when the Nets moved over, even though I'm a Knicks fan and I don't like Brooklyn Nets, but whatever. And I did like just various stuff, yeah. Some live recordings. That consists of my complete mixtape library. People who are coming out tonight, if they end up getting this happy hour food thing we're doing, mm-hmm. they're gonna get a complete digital download of every single remix rarity mixtape I've ever done.
Nice.
So they get that as well.
That's cool.
So the idea again is, I'm sure I'm butchering it, but I always say the food feeds the body, but music feeds the soul.
Right.
Right. So I want people to leave with a full belly, and I want their souls fed as well.
Very cool.
So they get both of that. And like I said, I've been able to bring this all over the place, and it's been kind of interesting because on the music side, most people don't pay for music anymore. Mm-hmm. I can imagine if you said to your average teenager to maybe even a 20-year-old, like, hey, are you going to buy that CD? They'd be like, what are you talking about? I could get this for free on a torrent or whatever.
Right.
I'd be so shocked if they did.
Yeah.
Because that the mentality has changed. They don't understand. Yeah. Music is a disposable item to them. Mm-hmm. With doing this event, I've actually been able to continue, selling my mixtapes.
Well, that's cool.
Making music, making money, off of the work I'm doing.
Right. And which you should be.
Yeah. And that's pretty rare. I don't know any of my contemporaries that used to make mixtapes who still actually make income making mixtapes. Mm-hmm. And that is actually the thing that I love doing. So I'm pretty lucky I get to keep doing it.
Okay, that's cool. Well, yeah. Okay, so we got to wrap this up. But one last question. Tell us about Poe the dog.
So the last piece of this little road trip puzzle is my dog, Poe. And the long story is that we found out he was sick last March. He had kidney failure, liver issues, and had multiple tumors in and around his liver and kidney. And we were given an extremely shortened timeline, days for him to live.
Oh, wow.
So we got up and left for the West Coast. I'm a touring DJ, so I don't really ever DJ in New York. I had already gigs had already been set up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to leave Poe, but I didn't want to skip my gigs.
Right.
So I was like, all right, well, we could drive. And fortunately, my fiance at the time, now wife, she was like, yeah, all right, let's do it. Let's see if we can do it. We ended up driving all the way via the South, Arizona, all the way up to Seattle, and then came back down, hit New Orleans, and went back up. And that trip was 46 days. Somehow, Poe is just, he got like super life force. He's
that's
like
awesome.
Obi-Wan. He just keeps going.
Yeah.
And that was not so March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. 8 months.
Wow.
He's now past 16 years old. He is not in the best shape physically. Unfortunately, he's getting old now. However, fortunately, he no longer is in kidney failure. We were able to reverse it somehow. His liver values are normal and he's no longer anemic. All that's happening now is just old age. And
right.
I'm of the, you're going to get different opinions, I think, until the paradigm shifts. But, Poe, if I was in the Alaskan tundra or whatever it is and he was my dog sledding, mm-hmm. pulling my dog sled, absolutely in his condition, I wouldn't have kept him.
Right.
That would not have been a situation where it would have been smart for myself, for the dog to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in New York City. He's kind of like my child.
Right.
And I think a lot of pets are like people's children now.
Oh, absolutely.
So, okay, in that case, if we have the financial means and the time and the way, why not take care of him until it's time for him not to be here for real?
Right.
And I've had some, not as much as in my head, but, there's people who are like, oh, well, the second a dog doesn't walk, you should put him down. That attitude is, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with it. It depends how you look at stuff. I always mention horses, right? When a horse breaks his leg, you shoot the horse.
Yeah.
Some people think it's the same thing with a dog. I don't agree. And we, again, this is our personal choice. We ended up bringing him on this quote unquote bucket list road trip. Mm-hmm. He got to swim in the Pacific Ocean. We made a second round, which is how we ended up back here in Minnesota, and where we went in a big, you know, went south and then went back up and going in a big U.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. We've gotten to do a lot of cool stuff. We hung out with a horse in Wyoming or South Dakota, and like Poe got to hang out with a horse.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that it might sound stupid to some people. They're like, well, how do you know he enjoyed it? Because I was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like dogs, they're, you know, they being around people, being around love, being around like new smells, that stimulates their mind.
Right.
And that's, you know, equates to happiness and cool. to me.
All right, so I'm going to wrap you up.
Okay. Well, DJ Neil Armstrong, I appreciate you coming
no
through
doubt.
And doing this, man. So
thank
you guys. And DJNeilArmstrong.com?
Yeah, everything DJ Neil Armstrong is real easy. DJ Neil Armstrong for Facebook, for
and what's
Twitter.
Pose?
For it's Pose is Poe the Dog's Big Adventure. So Poe is really the star now at this point.
He's P-O-
the
with P-O-H.
Yep.
P-O-H, yeah.
Yep. And then there's Dinner in a Mixtape, too.
Dinner in a Mixtape.
Yep.
There's that, but we're slowly building that one up. Most of it ends up flowing through mine anyway.
Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah. All right, let's
eat. Well, thank you, sir. Yes, let's eat. So just to remind everybody, Christmas time is coming. Great way to support the podcast is subscribing and reviewing the show on iTunes. And with Christmas time coming, though, go to Amazon. You buy your stuff. Go to thankyourob.com/Amazon, and this will take you to Amazon. It's a unique URL to the site. Everything still costs the same. You can use your Prime. And that's a good way to buy your stuff and support the podcast at the same time. ThankYouRob.com/Amazon. And go to ThankYouRob.com where there's links to the past episodes with Amber Ace Cleveland and other episodes I've done here at Bedlam. A link to iDefine Design, graphic design work I do for hire. You know what? Hire me for your next job. I'm reasonable, and I think I do a pretty good job. A link to JohnnyQuestionMark.com. The co-host of the show, who is absent today, and a link to Fuzz Talk Radio, good friends of ours down in Mankato, 24/7 internet radio playing local Minnesota music all day, every day. And then finally on thankyourob.com, there's a link right to Amazon Associates where you can buy your stuff from Amazon and support the podcast. That's it for today. I'm going to wrap it up with handshakes and high fives.
Before, no, no.
Yeah.
I just wanna tell you right now.
Yes.
Do everything, you know. If you specialize in one thing, you know, you really can't call yourself an all-out king.
How many people in this building been day one Rockefeller fans? How many people in this building got reasonable doubt? How many people know dead presidents? this only for my day one fans. I'm gonna take y'all back. Let me get that president. Yo, chick, she so thirsty. I'm in that 2C Lambo with your girl. She trying to jerk me.
Champion sound. The bugle had blown the many time and it still have one more time left because the amount of stripe up on our shoulder. Lambada sound I want to be this year and can't get free. I want to make it a little bit. Come, super big me and a girl.
Lucifer, son of the morning. I'm going to chase you out of earth.
Lucifer, son of the morning.
You out of earth, Lucifer, Lucifer, son of the morning.
I'm from the murder capital, where we murder for capital.
Lucifer, Lucifer, son of the morning. I'm gonna chase you out of earth, Lucifer, Lucifer, son of the morning.
So you need to change your attitude for they asking what happened to you.
Back at you. How we do? Primo, Jigga Man. History in the making. Let's go. I spit the murder, murder, murderous. My murderous shit. I keep the gangster, gangster, gangster. Yeah, yeah, the gangster. Fit? Feel me? I spit that Brooklyn, Brooklyn, Brooklyn.
Thank you.
gotta be able to take over a line with insides, take it over with throbs, top to bottoms. You gotta do everything, you know. If you specialize in one thing, you know, you really can't call yourself an all-out king.
Who's king? You're looking at him right here, my brother, the original. You know what I'm saying?
Once again, this is DJ Neil Armstrong, almighty Fifth Platoon DJ, straight out of NYC. Thank y'all for listening to me for all these years. Original Part 5. Until the next one.